Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Customer Discover Cast. I'm here with old friend Todd Uderstadt, and he is the host of the Founder to CEO podcast. We spoke, I believe, 2 years ago. Yep. And that's why I said old friend, not because he's old. He's a young buck. But I mean, I've known him for 2 years, apparently. And now I'm very happy to have him on my podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, be a guest, Ethan. Yeah, it was like 2 years ago when he came on my show. And we had a good time, and everyone loved your episode.
Thank you. I appreciate having you. Yeah. And, you know, we spoke about a ton and I know you. I know a little bit about your background, but I would love for you to introduce yourself so that the audience can get to know you a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm vice president of the Ethan Fan Club your mom's president. And other than that, I live in Cincinnati, Ohio with my family, originally from New England, but spent a number of years in the Army as an Army intelligence officer, worked in corporate America for a while, and then discovered, whoa, I really want to be an entrepreneur. And we started our own business in 2005, doing executive coaching, working one-on-one with CEOs and founders. And then I started my podcast 6 years ago. And, you know, it kind of took off because we were kind of talking about the anti-hero journey of founders and their really? Mistakes, mishaps, and misconceptions. And so, yeah, so it took off. And we have a lot of fun each week publishing on Tuesday mornings.
That's awesome. Talk more about that as well, about, you know, kind of the anti journey. But one thing I do want to give you credit for too, when I found the Founder to CEO podcast, I thought you captured a really interesting part of the market that people don't normally notice. You know, a lot of people, first time founders, they'll put founder/CEO. And a lot of times I've even gotten heat from it. They're like, you're not a CEO yet. You know, you're just a founder of a company. Once you get your first investment and your first clients, then maybe you're a CEO with the team. Yeah. And, you know, that's something that really does make sense. Because if you're too quick to, you know, get ahead of yourself and give yourself these titles, like, are you really building that business or are you just trying to do it for ego? You know,
it's a great point. And I guess I'm in the minority who says, hey, founders wear 45 different hats. One of those hats, even if it's a small sliver in the very beginning, is CEO. And so the amount of time you spend as the quote unquote CEO increases over time as you shed some of those founder responsibilities and you share them with colleagues that you've curated to be able to create an amazing team. And so I'm not one of these people that has an issue when, you know, a solopreneur calls themselves a founder CEO on the first week of them launching, you know, their software as a service platform. But I understand people's concerns with that. For me, you know, it's a journey that, as you said, oftentimes we don't talk about. And one of the reasons why we don't talk about it is because we founders, you and I, Ethan, and all the thousands of founders around the world who listen to my show and your show, you know, we find it difficult to talk about the mistakes, the mishaps, and the misconceptions that have transformed us the most. And what founders have told me is the reason why they're reluctant is because they're still building the business and they want to have credibility, right?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, if one of their investors hears them saying, oh, I really messed up 3 weeks ago, you know, we lost $150,000. In the back of their mind, they're like, oh, my investor's going to start doubting me, right? Or my key customers are going to doubt me. Or my brand new CTO is going to start saying, who did I link up with here, you know?
Right.
So I think it's natural, but I find that we all learn the most when we share our struggles. And that's why I think the podcast has grown, not because people like listening to my goofy self, but I think it's because we have a lot of great founders like you who came on the show who share those struggles in an authentic way.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's a huge point right there. And, you know, earlier before we started this episode, you said, I'm not an expert. I'm an extrovert. And I would say I'm the same way. You know, I'm not an expert in most of these things. But one thing I am an expert in is making mistakes, and, you know, left and right, because I actually, you know, all the books that you have in the background get me excited. I see 4-hour work week. I'm spotting out just from the spines of these books, some of the books that I've seen. I think I see Seth Godin, This Is Marketing, bottom right, but maybe I'm wrong. You had Seth Godin on your podcast as well, didn't you?
We did. He was super gracious to come on the show. You know, he doesn't need to come on my show, but he was super gracious to come on. But he even shared, because, you know, he was a multi-time founder before he was Seth, you know? And and so, yeah, he had some interesting stories here too. We all do. You know, none Absolutely. Of us wake up one day and success is waiting for us outside our front door, right? I mean, it's a journey.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. You know, I was like, from reading these books from industry leaders in their books, that's really where they capture their biggest mistakes and biggest lessons learned. And I just over the years, because, you know, when you go through, you know, a school system, you kind of view failure as a bad thing, right? Like you need to always be incrementally improving. But I realized in the business world, there's plenty of like proposed curriculums, but there is no all-in-one curriculum like lean startup, you know, that are lean philosophies or agile and scrum methodologies. Those are probably the only like, you know, curriculums I follow. But incremental failure is kind of part of that, right? In a sprint retrospective, you look back and say, where did we mess up? Where was our, you know, our approach ineffective? You know, how do we improve that for the next sprint? I love failure. Move fast and break things. That's my philosophy.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I've got a growing list of failures. I mean, last year I plunked down $60,000 to help founders with stress. And I found out that founders don't really want to buy anything to help them with their stress. And so the year before that, I spent another probably 50 grand on another thing. And so, you know, it's hard because failure is hard, but then you have to have what we all talk about, grit, determination, you know, all that kind of stuff to be able to say, hey, well, am I really excited about helping out these individuals, this group of people, whoever they are? And if you are, then you'll continue to be able to find ways to be able to serve and make the quote unquote business work, right?
That's right. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And you have no problem taking a risk when it comes to starting a new program. So you are an entrepreneur through and through, an expert in that. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Well, I'm not proud of it that I lost $60,000 trying to sell something that no one wanted. But I learned a lot. I mean, I'm a really horrible marketer. I really am. I'm like,
really?
Well, because I'm a former Army intelligence officer and I spent most of my time, you know, doing stuff and not having to be able to tell anything about it. So now, you know, when I became an entrepreneur, you kind of got to tell people what you're doing.
True.
And so I hadn't really honed those skills. And so it's been a journey. I have a lot of marketing coaches and people behind me helping to prop me up because I'm just not used to it. I haven't developed those skills.
That's awesome. So, you know, I have a friend who I met through TikTok, actually. He's the founder of Our Future podcast, and he gets, you know, a lot of big guests, almost comparable to you. He's newer in his journey, but he's just working so hard at it. And I remember he was saying, you know, like my user base is growing quickly, but I don't know anything about them. I just think that they're, you know, his spot in the market is, you know, basically Gen Z who are entering the workforce and they want to learn from industry leaders. And I told him, that's what I was getting at with you. I was like, you know, you have to just survey your audience and you have to understand them better than anyone else. Because when you do that, when you develop a new program or a new feature set or a meetup, you know them and you build an event that's highly curated to them that they've never seen before. And they'll have that kind of, you know, buy into you for the rest of your time in business. And that's one thing, you know, I was going to ask you about, like, what has been the number one thing you've learned from founder to CEO, whether it's from a guest you had or whether it's from your audience?
Oh my gosh. Like the number one thing.
Yeah. Or top three. You, I'm not a big fan of top one that, you know, weeds out a lot of golden nuggets there.
Well, how about I connect what I learned to what I failed at?
Sure.
And yeah. I'll tell you, and cause you said something I think is so true. Like it sounds so fundamental. But you're a much better founder than I am anyway. So
I failed a lot,
you know,
I guess that's what it's led to.
So I work with lots of founders and I've heard them in last year and the year before, you know, really struggling with a lot of stress. And so that's why I said, you know what, I'm going to start this platform called Stress Free Founder. Mm-hmm. And I just gotten off developing this program called Trail Team 10, which was a 6-month cohort of founders to help them work through some of the issues, and the marketing behind that was all horrible, but the service was great. At least everyone told me, got high marks, great testimonials, but it was hard to get people in. It wasn't really set up exactly the right way. And the marketing was horrible. I was trying to go off a hiking theme, Trail Team 10, and it was 10 founders, et cetera. Anyway, so I paused that, started Stress Free Founder, but I never really surveyed my audience. I was going off of my anecdotal experiences with founders. So I went from an ambiguous marketing product, Trail Team 10, that didn't really have any type of connection seemingly to founders, to Stress Free Founder, which was really in your face, like mm-hmm. Stress Free Founder, right?
Right.
And what I found out was that obviously some people bought it and it served them well. But what I found out was is that not everyone was looking for that. And what I also found out was this. I did what you just said. I hired a grad student at the Vanderbilt University. Her name's Nancy. And I had her do a qualitative research study on all my podcast episodes.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, because I said to myself, wait a second, I talk to founders all the time. Like, they're already telling me what their problems are, right? How come I'm not listening to them?
That's so smart. Yeah. So what was the outcome of that?
Well, so she came back and she did this like survey. And what we found out was, is there really are just two major issues that cause founders stress that they would rather have help with directly rather than helping them manage their stress.
A little root cause analysis.
That's right. Nice. You want to know what they are?
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Capital and colleagues.
Yeah.
And and as soon as it comes out of my mouth, you're like, of course, Todd, you know what I'm talking about? So under capital, it's how to be able to make crucial connections with customer funded people, key customers who give you funds, and investors who give you funds. So that's the capital side. And the colleague side, they struggle with building crucial connections with co-founders, with profitable partners that help them be able to scale things. And of course, top talent, like the key people they need to help scale things. So I kind of categorize them in two areas, you know, capital and colleagues, because both are a little bit different. But that led me to soon, which we'll be launching, which is Crucial Connections, where, I mean, I teach this stuff to founders all the time. I was stupid and blind. The fact that I was trying to working on helping them manage their stress rather than deal with the issues that they need help with. And the truth is, Ethan, when it comes to like the capital side of it, the big issue is that founders frequently get caught up in the product as opposed to the relationship.
Mm.
And being able to build those relationships quickly and efficiently and effectively, so they're not doing 500 Zoom calls to find the right investor or the right key customers, but maybe 50 because they did a better job connecting with the right individuals for that capital that they need, either from customers or for investors.
That's right. Everything you're saying right now. Yeah. Everything you're saying right now is exactly what I'm going through. You know, like I went through, there's an app called Fundin, and it's from a founder we worked with who has a database of all of these VC firms, you know, and I contacted probably 100 of them, and only a few of them contacted back. They're like, you know, you're early stage. But then, you know, I'm going through a screening process with 757 Angels and then the Aggie Angel Network, which is in Texas, and then several other independent angels we're working with. And I've realized more than anything, and even that same founder told me, he said, the culture of investment, you know, you think it's very transactional. In America, especially on the East Coast, it is somewhat, but actually on the West Coast and then in Dubai as well, he said they have a lot of similarities. It's all relationship focused. It's all about, they'll invite you out there and they'll hang out with you for a week. And if they see themselves being friends with you, they'll probably invest in you independent of the numbers. But if you hang out and you're too strict, too rigid, you're not hanging out and having fun with them, they, you know, the chances of them investing in you is slim to none, because they want to build relationships with their founders. Because even if you're not successful in this venture, there's probably going to be another venture where you will. And there's, you know, a good industry connection there. And that changed my mind a lot. And that's really hard to raise in a remote environment, if you think about it, because we can have this podcast and we can speak one-on-one, but we can't go out for virtual. Well, I mean, I guess we could do virtual drinks, but, you know, it's not the same, you know, body language and, you know, mannerisms and energy as a whole. I like to pick up on someone's energy as well. So you have very positive energy, by the way. That's why, you know, I'm happy to reconnect. But, you know, it's really interesting what you're saying, because I'm doing my own root cause analysis, essentially. So you're helping me. And as an audience member to your podcast, I've listened to multiple episodes. It's really exciting to see someone taking the time to get to know their audience better.
Oh, thanks. Well, I obviously have messed up on that many times. And I'd like to think maybe I might be onto something now, because I just give it an example. I was talking to a founder, two founders recently, two founder stories on the subject that you just reminded me of, about the idea of, you know, becoming someone's friend and whatnot. The first founder was in the middle of a meeting with an investor, And, you know, he's a pretty self-aware kind of guy. And he says, Todd, I could tell it wasn't going well. And I asked him why, and he gave me some indicators. And those are some pretty typical indicators. I mean, I've been teaching people how to do this for years. And I said to him, so what happened next? He says, well, I didn't know why we weren't connecting, and therefore I wasn't able to pivot midstream. Got it. And so I teach people this model to be able to, because I'm a former Army intelligence officer, and my job was to profile people 24/7, predict their behavior so you can influence their behavior. And so it's like second nature to me, but I realized at one point in time, a couple of years ago, wait a second. I've had lots of training on this. I've studied this. Like, it's not natural for someone to do what I do, right? And so anyway, I gave him a couple of tips. I said, hey, listen, this guy appears to be this archetype of a person. You might want to borrow some behavior short time period in midstream if you encounter someone like that again. Because that guy was gone. He wasn't interested in investing now because he didn't make a connection. And those become, that's why I call them crucial connections. Because they really need to happen in order to keep your startup going. So that was story number one. Story number two, this was just like last week. I'm not going to tell you who it was because someone who you and others would know. And I showed him the types of investors, either customer-funded investors or VCs, angels, family, et cetera. So these are the type of people you are less likely to make a crucial connection with. And you're going to have to pour more energy into doing it for these reasons. And he said to me, oh my gosh, Todd, this is so true because I just went through this the other day. And so, you know, when Ben Horowitz from Andreessen Horowitz wrote the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, he has this quote in the book that I love. And I won't quote exactly. Something like, most of the time, we as founders, we have to, the biggest thing we have to learn is how to manage our own psychology.
Right.
And the truth is that if someone is meeting you, either they are looking to help you with capital or they're looking to be a colleague in some form or fashion, a co-founder, a top talent, or a profitable partner, they already have an interest. Like, they want to be part of your success. Your job is to understand your psychology, map your mind and understand that, and then map the mind of the other person and then win their heart.
Yeah. Wow. And that's awesome.
But it's hard to do. It's hard to do.
That's true. Yeah. And sometimes you're dealing with opposites of yourselves, because if you think about founders, and I told you a little bit about the software I use, you know, to do very brief.
The name of it again.
Crystal Knows. Actually, episode, I think 11 is when someone told me about it. He's a professor of, you know, Internet of Things at Missouri College. And he was like, you know, you can do an easy DISC personality assessment based on someone's LinkedIn, verbs that they used and language. But one thing I realized from doing a general DISC assessment on different personality types, other founders tend to be other drivers, right? You know, we're not risk averse. We love risk. We like big picture and we like taking risk. We're very like just focused on moving forward, right? We don't overanalyze, we just move. And then I would do personality assessments on investors and see that they were pretty much the opposite. They're all about numbers. They analyze things before moving forward. They're very diligent in their efforts. And unless you take the time to really research someone, you know, an investor archetype from that, I've also done further analysis based on there's audience. It's actually, instead of audience with a C, it's audience with an S, insights reports. They normally cost about $10,000. I had a free trial. And I did, you know, a very in-depth segmentation analysis on angel investors and their personality traits. I don't know how they have this information. It's just a market report, you know, but it's normally really expensive. And I saw they're all the same thing. They're analytic, very statistical minded. And if the numbers don't match and the data doesn't back up their decision, they're probably not going to move forward, because then they're making a subjective decision that's against what they know to be, you know, accurate and to be, you know, a good investment. So unless you really, when you're pitching an investor, unless you're taking that into account, probably not going to form a connection. They're going to say, this is a subjective decision, I'm not moving forward. So you're hitting the nail on the head.
I appreciate that. And I agree with you. I'm just curious, did you discover something about yourself in that market research as you were discovering about other people? Like, I'm curious. I'll tell you what I discovered about myself. You tell me about what you discovered about yourself.
Yeah, sure. You know, from doing my own personality assessments, I realized that, you know, he did a live personality assessment on me. He went to my LinkedIn account, did Crystal Knows. There's a Google plugin. Spontaneous, doesn't like to plan things, just kind of learn as you go, think on your feet. Risk, you know, not very risk averse at all. I love risk and, you know, the stuff like that, leader and all those flattering things as well. But that's what I realized, that that's the complete opposite of what I should bring to the table when I speak to certain demographics, as well as like investors, right? Who are numerically focused. So I actually would try to, I would practice my pitch basically just talking about numbers instead of talking about the big picture, idealistic, you know, things that get me motivated. And, you know, it worked. You know, we're moving through final conversations with angel investors. But before, I used to get laughed out of meetings, you know, and rightfully so.
I've always loved that about you. Like you're like a uber learner. And I think maybe that's where you and I connect too, is that I like to learn too. And I've taken almost every possible assessment on myself, even some clinical assessments over the years, because you know I'm always interested in, if I'm going to use something with someone, like I want to know it myself. That relates to me too. And so I've taken the DISC and Myers-Briggs, and in Cincinnati, Ohio, right now, for some reason, the Enneagram is all popular with everyone. And so there's a
Which
lot of
one?
tools.
Which one?
The
Enneagram?
Enneagram is very popular.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Anyway, so I guess my point is that there's a lot of different ways of taking a look at people. And I think the big lesson, I think, is to try to understand, like, okay, this works for me to help me understand myself and understand my people. For me, almost every assessment, I mean, I even before I started my company in 2005, I pitched my wife as my investor with a 35-page pitch deck over dinner to start my company in 2005. And I took all my report cards from kindergarten all the way up to high school. I took all my Army officer evaluation reports and anything else ever written about me, and I threw it into software, and I wanted to know what were the keywords. And I did a little bit of sentiment, and one word came up:
What was it?
enthusiastic.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought,
Podcast host.
who's gonna argue with enthusiastic, right? But the problem is, for my opportunity to work on, you know, with both capital people and also colleague people, is my enthusiasm can sometimes shut other people down. A. B, my enthusiasm, to your point before, for those who are a little bit more detail oriented, financial oriented, you know, want to look at the numbers rather than want to hear someone get all excited about something, that could sow distrust initially in an investor conversation. I'll never forget, my investor 2005 was my wife, and also he has since passed, but there was a man from Turkey whose name was Halis. Halis was my savior during the time period.
Really?
He worked at Huntington Bank, and they gave me a loan. Unfortunately, he has since passed. He passed from lung cancer, God rest his soul, because he was such a good man. And he was a big supporter of me, would put up tables in the bank office to help build our business for us, whatnot. And I remember me getting all enthusiastic about this, and I got one loan. And then I went back to him and said, "Hey, Halis, I need some more money." And so I remember the look on his face when I showed him how enthusiastic, how things were good, things were going and whatnot. And he said to me, "Todd, your enthusiasm was well noted, is well noted, but you need to make some money first."
Never related to a statement so much in my life.
I looked at him like, oh, I know how he's.
Yeah, it's like we know, but we just love the journey, you know, independent
That's
of the
right.
money.
That's
Like
right.
that's, you know, that's how I know you're an entrepreneur through and through. You're humble, but I mean, that's it right there. Like you said, you spent $60,000, and you're like, but I learned a lot. That's what I always say. You know, I haven't spent
Wishing,
sixty
right?
thousand dollars. Yeah, I'll get to that level, but it's like you feel so good just about doing the work and learning on the fly that you're like, money's a bonus. That's great. But, you know, honestly, like we're now starting to, I was going to mention, I'll mention it live too. What you're doing with co-founders or with founders, right? Helping them form those connections and, you know, well, from a colleague perspective and from a personality assessment as well, you know, you're a good match to partner with someone like cofounderslab.com. And, you know, they have, I think it was like 916,000 users. They have 60,000 new, like new people coming to their site. I think it was every month. I just spoke with the CEO yesterday because we have a partnership with them,
Oh, cool.
customerdiscovery.co. I'm the product lead for them and I'm helping them improve their platform. and they're looking to expand their feature set. So when it comes to if their value proposition is fostering connections, right? That's really what Co-Founders Lab does. You meet with potential co-founders. I mean, your platform, you know, from a resource perspective, seems like a great fit. Helping, you know, enhance the quality of those connections is super, super important. They're trying to own mindshare around that space. You know, it's just interesting to see how, you know, you can participate in that as well.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. Thank you for that tip.
Yeah. I'll follow up on that. I forgot to add it to my LinkedIn. He just told me yesterday, don't you want to add yourself as a product lead? They gave me equity in the company as well. I'm an advisor now. It's awesome. But that's something that I really thought about when you first brought up the stress-free founders before we scheduled this episode. I was like, wow. I mean, so many founders, myself included. And you're right. I don't want to talk about, you know.
I got a story about that too. I got to tell you so forth. So I was working with this man in Europe. I don't want to say any more detail than that because he may listen and he may hear this. He said to me, "Hey Todd, what's it going to say on my credit card receipt?"
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "Well, I don't remember. I use Stripe. I can't remember what it says." He says, "Well, it can't say stress-free founder."
Mm.
And I said, "Well, why?" He says, "Well, I don't want my co-founders to see that I'm taking a course called stress-free founder." I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Well, I don't want them to think I have any stress." I said, "But you do have stress." "Yeah, but I don't want them to think I have stress." "Oh, okay. Right. I got it."
Yep. That's right. You know, any sign of weakness, it's kind of like tapping into that age old masculinity archetype as well. I feel like I do it as well. Like, we don't show weakness. We're not going to do that. I do my little, you know, burnout assessment each week. We have a little Slack plugin and I make sure I'm still on top of it. But honestly, it's somewhat biased. Like, I can easily say I'm not, you know, inclined to burn out just by saying, "Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go," you know. But what you're doing is, I mean, you're tapping the nail on the head, and that root cause analysis really perked up my eyebrows because I really want to know more about what you saw. And maybe, you know, I can help you guide a new product. You know, I would love to help you out with that. Thank because you. There's a huge demand. We just don't talk about it. There is a huge demand though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And quite frankly, I mean, I part of the burnout is most founders know they need to make these crucial connections. But there's only so many hours in the day. And then the expectations, if you already have some investor money to grow fast, I mean, but relationships take time.
Yep.
And so my position is, hey, then why don't you do a better job at making the relationships with the people that you are encountering, right? So that you don't have to spend and understand those mistakes faster, so that you don't have to do 100 Zoom calls. You can do 20 and get the cash you need and keep moving along. Because I think that's part of the problem when it comes to these connections, whether it's finding a co-founder, which it sounds like that platform accelerates that process, which is great.
Yep.
Or it's dealing with a partner who could help you be more profitable, or even, of course, that key customer or that investor, angel investor, whoever. That's, I guess what my eyes got wide open to is I'm good at that. I excel at that. And I underestimated. Well, I underestimated that most founders haven't developed that skill and don't have the training that I have as a former Army intelligence officer to kind of figure people out fast and then modify midstream so that we can map their mind and win their heart, which is the two steps to being able to make a crucial connection. And so I underestimated this. So that's what I'm working on now.
It's exciting because, you know, I'm enthusiastic as well when I hear about new products and, you know, a new and improved way to solve an age old problem. You know, I get really excited. But one thing too, managing conflicts, right? Because you run into even if you map their mind and, you know, they're someone that you didn't even know existed technically from a deeper perspective. Of course, you know that, you know, they physically exist, but, you know, again, to know their deeper aspects doesn't necessarily mean that it's always super easy to manage, you know, friction, right? So also having a framework around managing conflicts, because, you know, I've met with potential co-founders and they've told me backstories about their, because I always ask, I'm like, tell me about a time you managed a conflict with a COO or, you know, a CEO. And sometimes there's like, there's often, you know, an issue because everybody wants a piece of the pie. And when they do certain things or contribute to the business, they want a bigger piece of the pie. So I had people who said, like, you know, my COO, who was an old friend of mine who I'd known for years, wanted to become the CEO after, you know, we got into an accelerator. He said, "I don't want to move forward with this business unless I can take the CEO position. Well, that was a big issue for the founder of the company, who was the CEO at the time. He was like, well, what? I don't want to give up my spot as CEO. So, you know, things like that, you know, how do you manage that? And, you know, it doesn't have to be mission critical. Maybe there's a root cause behind that. Maybe, you know, the CEO feels like he's overshadowed in the media and he just wants to be the media spokesman. So he's fine with being the CEO, but he wants to be the public face for it. So, you know, there's things like that where there's a huge gap, and I have trouble with that. Like whenever there's any kind of conflict, you know, I had a conflict who was with someone who was like my head of partnerships. Basically, she would form all the connections and she wanted half the company. And I was like, well, let's do a root cause analysis. Why is that? And we actually figured out it was because startup life wasn't really for her. She wanted VC, you know, she wanted to go to the VC route, and we're good friends now still. But because we took the time to think about that, which came very unnatural, let me tell you, because, you know, it was initially like that fight or flight response. This person was half my company. You can help navigate that area and say, like, you know, here are the three common conflicts and here's the root cause of these three common conflicts. Here's the alternative path to managing without any kind of like mission critical issues. You know, that right there, I'd pay for that.
So interesting that you say that. You know, it sounded like to me that that was a little bit of a struggle for you at first, but then you got through it.
It wasn't too much of a struggle. It was just okay. So new to me because I'd never been through that. Yeah. Gotcha. And you know, it was, I thought that was going to be a mission critical thing. And then when we dove deeper, you know, it was just more of like, it's a transit. It was not too recent. It was about 3-4 months ago, but you know, she was someone I had never really met in person, but known a while through entrepreneurship communities. You know, she really wanted to help out with what we were doing. And, you know, it was exciting to both join, but everything's so new. We're both learning on the fly. We have no idea how to navigate this space, you know, for first time founders, especially, you know, something like that, super important. So what would be like your best advice for a first time founder, or even if you're, I'm not technically a first time founder. I always feel like it, but
no, you're not.
For someone who is even a seasoned founder, managing any kind of conflicts in that early stage founder journey. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I got to tell you the story because it gets to the point, it gets to the heart of this like one thing that I think is critical to assess within ourselves. So I was working with this person, and he's been complaining a lot about his two investors. Mm. And there was a lot of conflict both ways. And this person I was working with is not the type of person, unlike probably you and I, where he's not really good at having those conflicting conversations in the moment. They don't have good retorts. You know, they're like, they want to think about things more. And so it's hard for them to kind of engage there in the moment in what would perceive by some as a conflict conversation. Anyway, so I said to him, well, why don't you just strip out that and just say, hey, you want to interview these other people? Because you need to understand something that you don't quite understand. And that way there, you don't have to worry about a retort or reply or anything. And just frame it that way first. Let them know that's what you're doing, right? And you want to know the question he asked me? Are you ready for this? I nearly fell out of my chair.
What was it?
He said to me, but Todd, what if I don't want to listen to them?
Mm.
And I said, oh, now we've got to the heart of the problem, right? Yeah. And I said, well, why wouldn't you want to listen to them? Well, I'm not so sure I like them, A, and B, I'm not so sure I'm excited about their success.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so I share that story because I think that, you know, when you're a founder, you have to like find something to like about the other person that you need to have a relationship with, A, and B, you have to be at some level invested in their success and what they are interested in getting done in life, and find that sweet overlapping spot between what they want to accomplish in their life and what you want to accomplish in your startup.
Yeah.
Without those two things, it's really hard to develop a connection with someone.
That's right. Wow.
And so I know that sounds like basic and elemental, and perhaps to many of your listeners, they're like, okay, Todd, yeah, we understand that. We know that. But I'm telling you, I think we have to ask ourselves that question frequently when there's conflict, because I find that that's a fundamental building block that sometimes we may not be realizing is in the back of our head that we need to ask ourselves, do I like this person, or is there something I like about this person, right? Because you don't like everything about another person, right?
Yeah, and what grudges are you holding, right?
What grudges are you holding? Exactly.
Yeah, that's right? From what I understand, that's common in marriages and relationships as well. You have to identify. Well, you know, maybe you think someone's doing things with reasons, with bad reasons, but oftentimes, you know, maybe it's just a perception thing. They're not doing it on purpose, you know.
That's right.
I'm not married, but I've read books on marriage to make sure I'm prepared for that day.
You're so fun. But you will be soon. I know you will.
Yeah, one day. Yeah. We'll see.
But, you know, I think, anyway, so back to your question about what I've learned about, you know, the maybe co-founder conflict or conflict with investors or conflict with profitable partners or top talent or whatnot. And I think we have to ask ourselves as founders, is there something I like about them or is there nothing I really like about them? Mm. And two, am I interested in their personal success? And that sweet overlap between their desires and the desires of the company, because the desires of the company frequently are the desires of us as a founder, because in the early stages, you know, before we have 200 people, I mean, it's our emotional energy, our emotional vision, our emotional disruption, our emotional, this big problem we're going to solve, that is often the source and is often the attractive feature to the people who are around you, helping you bring that idea alive.
That's right. Wow. Finding that what is it called? Ikiga, the kind of center. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. You're familiar
Japanese
with framework.
Yes.
Yeah. And how would you know, do you have a framework around that? We don't want you to give away your secrets, but that's kind of, you know, somewhat final words of wisdom when it comes to that framework. What would you say? You know, do you have any kind of guidelines or recommendations to the audience about how to find that?
Yeah, I think, as I said before, I break it down to two areas. You got to map the mind and win the heart. Mapping the mind means you have to understand the motivations, your motivations and the motivations of the person. So what are their interests? What are their needs and expectations interpersonally? What are their values? And where are they at in their life cycle and life? The things you're trying to, because that's a big influence, big part. And sometimes we talk about career anchors, which is a topic that an author wrote about a while back. So you got to understand those things about the other person, and that's work, you know.
Yep.
Then you have to win the heart, and under win the heart, there's about 30 ing words that that we know help to be able to win the heart of the other person. Once you've said, "I understand their motivations, and I'm interested in their motivations, and I'm interested in winning their heart," so things like, "Okay, am I validating their experiences?" Meaning, am I not judging them? And am I not trying to fix them? I'm just validating that that's who they are. Am I accepting of the other person? Am I summarizing the things I hear from the person so they know they understand them? Am I empathizing with the situation, with the things that this person's going through? There's a whole bunch of ing words that we know send the signal to the other person that we care about them.
That's awesome. You know, that, I mean, if there's a founder out here listening to this, I don't see how you can't see value in this. You know what I mean? Because, like, from a positive perspective, it's like, you know, if I do a call with a co-founder, an intro call, this complementary feature set would be perfect, you know, because I can establish a superficial fit with someone. Oh, I like them. You know, this is someone I would go fishing with and hang out with. But, you know, you can do that. You know, say we hit a button. Plus, you know, check sign, almost like a dating app, right? Like you check off, like, yeah, this is someone I'd partner up with. Once you hit that, you know, you can have some sign of app or, you know, some kind of framework, maybe a type form that goes through and it runs this personality assessment, you know, and it says, okay, there's a 80% match here. You know, you've hit several key metrics and, you know, this is a good partnership or X, you know, this is a toxic connection, potentially toxic. Right. It doesn't seem like you're bought into their future success. And that could be a mission critical issue, you know, things like that. That gets me really excited. How can we build some software around this to where it's an app that some people could use to assess their you know, match with a founder?
Well, it already exists and we use it.
Really?
And so the problem with some of the tools out there in the world is they don't separate behavior from motivation. So I know you love the DISC and I love the DISC too. But the DISC and a lot of the Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and all those, they do struggle with separating someone's motivations from their behaviors. And the truth is, Ethan, we key off of behavior.
Mm.
We see someone's behavior and we instinctively as human beings want to give that behavior back to that person or be our default behavior self. Well, the truth is a significant number of people what they're expecting from you is hidden and is different than your behavior or is different than their behavior. And you have to be able to understand those differences so that you're not in a situation like the founder I mentioned I talked to, who said to me, Todd, I knew something was going wrong. Like they could sense and feel it, right?
Right.
But I didn't know why. And so because I didn't know why, I didn't know how to pivot.
Ah.
We help them find out the why behind that what.
Yeah. Behind that gut feeling, right?
That's right. That's
you help
right.
structure that. That's awesome. Right. Yeah. Todd, it's been a pleasure, man. This has been great. You know, I looked up at the time. I was like, whoa, we've been on this call.
Remember,
for
extrovert, not expert.
Both, you're both, man. But, you know, I want to give you the time, you know, tell the audience, you know, what's on the plan for 2021. We've talked about it a little bit. Tell them how they can get in contact with you. They need to listen to your podcast. So please thank plug you. That. I see the mic that I thought the little branding thing that you had is so cool. Right. So right let's definitely include that.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell them, speak your piece.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's a joy to be with you, Ethan. Every time I hang out with you, I get so pumped up because of your positive energy. And I have been marveled at how you have transformed yourself in the last 2 years into a tech founder. And I mean, it just, you amaze me. And I guess that's why my way of saying, I love interviewing founders on my podcast from Founder CEO, because I learn so much. I get so energized by listening to all the great things that so many founders are doing around the world. So feel free to listen to us at FromFounderCEO.com. We're on all the podcast apps. And the platform that I connect with people the most and easy for me is on LinkedIn. And so I encourage you to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I guarantee I'm the only Todd Uderstedt in there. So feel free, you know, just Google it. You'll find it. And reach out to me at Todd@FromFounderCEO.com. I'm in the early stages of proofing out this new concept of crucial connections. And already had to chop off my left arm to pay for the domain. So if you go to the crucialconnections.com right now, you won't see anything because we're still doing some early proofing of all of it before we start rolling out to everyone. But awesome. I'm going to roll it out to my podcast listeners first when we roll it out, as a tip of my hat to all of them who've been loyally listening for 6 years.
Does that mean I get access to it?
Of course.
Yeah. Awesome. Yes. Good stuff. Well, Todd, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Ethan. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.